Welcome to the Shift Spotlight Podcast. I'm Winter, your host and VP of Strategy at GCE Strategic Consulting. GCE are business transformational experts that provide fractional and executive leadership services that help business owners and CEOs shift from working in the business to working on the business. Our podcast was created to celebrate CEOs, visionaries, and the EOS community, all while promoting your business to our remarkable and influential network. We are excited to celebrate your stories of change, challenge, success, and shifts you've made happen along the way. The Shift Spotlight is always looking for podcast guests. Go to shiftspotlight.com to apply today. We'd love to have you. Hey, everybody, it's Winter with the Shift Spotlight, and today we are here with Jennifer Zick. She is the founder and CEO of Authentic and can be found at authenticbrand.com. So that's a pretty easy website to remember. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thanks so much, Winter. Glad to be here.
Thank you. So before we dive into what you do and how you do it, let's start out with something a little bit fun. Why don't you tell us an interesting fact about you that people may not know?
Oh my goodness. Oh boy, I'm just going to have to draw from what randomly pops up in my head. I don't share this with most people because I feel like it brings on judgment, but I'm going to come into full confession mode right now.
Yes, do it on our show.
When I was a little girl, I loved nothing more than going to my small town pageant and watching all the big girls dressed up in gowns and competing. And I always dreamed of doing that. And so I did that after my senior year of high school, and I ended up winning the little small town crown without recognizing that I would have to go on to compete at like the state level in the Miss America contest. And I was so grossly underprepared, underfunded, not equipped to be a pageant queen. But that was such a great adventure. And I actually met some really fabulous, brilliant women along the way. But yeah, that's something I don't tout very often.
Aww, I actually love that story. And there's some synergy. So I was a pageant little girl. My mom is the one who put me in it. I was a Wendy Ward girl. Those were big in Florida. I won a lot of awards and I'm pretty sure I won some money, but I never saw it because I was like 3, 4, 5 years old. So mom raked in on that one. But yeah, I got old enough to know what was going on and we were underfunded and didn't have the all the things, right? Like there's a whole world out there. But yeah, so I also had a little bit too. So I never get to share an interesting fact about myself. So that's cool.
Oh, I love that we have that in common. And I still do love a nice tiara. I mean, we should wear it every day, really.
Yes. So you wear the tiara at your company. You are the CEO and founder. So at a high level, why don't you tell us what it is that you do?
Sure. Well, when I decided pageantry was not my future path, my career, my career actually took a lot of twists and turns through sales and marketing and executive leadership roles before I started Authentic. So Authentic is now an 8-year-old company. I started it before I knew what kind of business it would become. I just knew that it was going to be something to do with marketing and building authentic brands, like building marketing the right way in growth businesses. And I came to discover that the path that I was building was to become a fractional chief marketing officer firm. So for the past 8 years, that's what Authentic has done. I've built a team of exceptional chief marketing officers. We're one of the only CMO organizations in the world that employs our fractional chief marketing officers. And so they're all on staff with Authentic, and we work with companies usually between 5 million to 100 million in that established growth phase, all across the US, sometimes beyond. And what we do in most cases is we step in as their first executive head of marketing, and we're in there as operating leaders, as a member of their leadership team, rolling up our sleeves, building marketing foundation and acceleration, and helping them really figure out what marketing needs to be in the next stage of growth.
Which, as you know, and I know from, I mean, we're nearing 100 episodes, so I've talked to a lot of CEOs, but you know, it's one of the most confusing aspects to a CEO and founder. Most, if not all, are not marketers. They are visionaries. They had a great idea, you know, so this aspect of the business is one of the most confusing that I think we see out there. Would you not agree?
I absolutely agree. And that inspired our tagline, which is overcome random acts of marketing. It was the phrase that came to mind one day when I was meeting with a CEO and a CFO who were expressing that exact frustration. They're like, we've been told we need to do marketing. We believe that that could be valuable to us, and we're spending money and we're doing things, but we aren't clear on how that investment is translating into value in our business or into our growth. We just feel really disconnected from what the tactics are to where the results should be.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's a very common situation for almost every single growth company, because they start off as founder-led with that brilliant idea. They have to be sales-driven first, because you don't have a company until you can sell something more than once. Right. And then you have to build some operating rigor. And then eventually, when they get to that piece of growth, they look behind them and there's a trail of random acts of marketing along the way. It's just
And that was one of my questions, is what your definition was, because I've heard it. I've got a background in marketing and public relations. I did it for 20 years for corporate America before I started doing it for myself. So I get it. And it is random, like throwing spaghetti at a wall and hoping, you know, one sticks. So why do so many companies out there, why do they all practice random acts of marketing?
Yeah, it's because it really is, like, to pick up where I left off, it's a natural evolution of business growth. If you think of when you first started your business, or when I started mine, and we even had the advantage of having marketing backgrounds. But when you first start, you build your first version of a sales deck, perhaps, maybe your first version of a landing page and a website, but your business is still becoming. You're still determining what your market fit and focus is. You're still figuring out which clients are the best fit. There's this natural growth phase in an early stage startup where you begin with a hypothesis, and then you test that hypothesis in market to refine it and further refine it. So you're constantly changing, and who you will be tomorrow is not who you are today. And so those iterations create some chaos in the brand, especially if they're not overseen by an experienced marketing leader who can navigate those transitions along the way. And then usually the first pieces of marketing that need to be activated are more tactical. Like, maybe you need to put a basic CRM in place, or, like I said, your basic website or an email program. But often those tactics are being managed in silos by specific tactical specialists, and they're not connected strategically.
Right.
And so all of that pretty quickly starts to create this mass of activity that feels like it's all moving in different directions, and we're uncertain. And the metrics that you get out of those activities, they can be very confusing. Those engagement or vanity metrics, they can mean something, but they don't ultimately tell you what's the ROI.
Right, right. So I'm curious, why do you employ all of your fractional CMOs? That's kind of a unique aspect of what you do, I think.
It is unique. Yeah, we definitely chose the more invested path for growing our team. And that came as a consequence of me really searching my heart as a founder and asking myself, what do I want for this business? And what do I want my end game to be? Because every founder eventually exits their business, right? And so I started with that end in mind. And when I determined that I was building a fractional CMO and consulting organization, it was a hypothesis, and I had never heard the word fractional before I met fractional CFOs. Yes. So I didn't know anybody else 8 years ago doing what I was trying to do. It was a complete hypothesis. So to de-risk that, I originally started with 1099 contractors and marketers I trusted. Yes. And I started building our methodology and having them implemented and working with clients and understanding the value and could this scale. And when we determined it was scalable, I sat back and I thought, okay, what kind of model do I really want to build? Do I want to build franchises and sell individual franchises to use our methodology? Do I want to have this be a licensed brand of independent agents? Do I want a gig network with a database full of names? Do I want to employ these people? I looked at every single model that was out there, partnerships, all the things. And ultimately for me, it came down to two things. I wanted a tightly knit culture of people who knew each other, trusted each other, worked together, collaborated, had each other's backs, were willing to like lay their marketing armor at the door and come in vulnerable and learn from each other. And I felt like I could cultivate that best in an employment model where they were required to be at meetings. They were taught how to use our methodology. They were expected to lean on each other, and they were expected to live our values. And the second part that was important to me is that I'm building a business, not just because I love what I do, but as an owner, I'm trying to create value for an eventual exit in whatever direction that takes me. And to create real sticky value, I needed to be deeper than 1099s.
That's right. That's right.
So those were my motivating factors, and I'm really grateful that we made that decision early on.
Yeah. So how many employees do you have?
We have 27 employees today. We have a team of operating leaders in sales and marketing and client services here in our headquarters in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And then our CMOs, we employ across the United States, but a good portion of them are also based here in Minnesota. We have a really wonderful talent pool here to draw from.
Interesting. Interesting. So what strategies? I mean, you've got people locally, you've got people over, you know, we are fractional, but we are employees. So what strategies do you use to build strong and effective teams in running that kind of dynamic?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple different strategies that we use on different areas of the business. So first, in terms of client services and client relationships, we don't just, you know, throw a list of names at a client and have them choose a CMO. We have a very curated fit process up front. So our business development team are consultative leaders in the process of understanding the client's requirements, working with our client services team on really thoughtful match process. We have a great track record for making that right match, and we make it based on the relevant business model experience first, because you can't take an e-commerce consumer marketer and drop them into a B2B tech company and have them be successful. Right. So relevant business model and industry and the right capacity and all of those components, culture fit, personality. And then we surround every client engagement with a right fit CMO guarantee. So the client knows at any point, if for any reason it's not working, we've got their back and we can bring another CMO in. We almost never have to do it, but when we have, it's always been seamless. And we have a client services leader attached to every client account. And so our CMOs are implementing our authentic growth methodology. It's our marketing operating system. And our client services team is making sure they're well supported in that. And they're checking in with them, with the client, for quarterly business reviews, just making sure that we're maximizing the value of not only that CMO for every client, but the value of our mind share that brings all of our CMOs together to collaborate, and the value of our authentic ally network of agency peers that we can refer as well. So we really wrap our arms around the client.
I mean, like, from the second you popped on here today, you know, we had this energy between us. And it's so funny because, you know, so much of what you're saying is what we do. So GCE Strategic Consulting, they're our sponsor. And they're known for being fractional integrators, but we do have a lot of other practice areas, HR, fractional CFOs, et cetera, et cetera. And we do the exact same process. And it did take a little trial and error to nail that process down, but it's, you know, you match them with the right personality based on who they are. Like, I'm a hit it and quit it person. If I get a high I personality working with me, I'm going to lose my mind, right?
Yes.
Because it's just not going to work. But a lot of what you do is what we do to figure out how to, you know, make that work for the client. And we too, and you never hear this in the integrator world at all, but we offer a guarantee as well that if you're not happy, we will replace them. So it's interesting that we both kind of figured that out in completely separate fields entirely. But I mean, nobody sees the muck and the mud that you go through to end up at that point.
That's exactly the point. It's like, we started off by talking about how a lot of this conversation will be like, where did we get it wrong? Where did we mess up? Like, anything that we do well is a product of where we screwed up or had a blind spot originally. And we felt some pain and we're like, we need to resolve that. What's the right path forward? And that scaling any business is successfully means constantly staying in tune with, like, where are the gaps and the blind spots now? Or where is the past process no longer serving us, and how do we adapt it? So we've just tried to be really intentional about that.
So back to the types of clients that you serve. So you don't have to name names or situations, but, like, give us an example of a client that needed your help that you came in and fill in the blank, and what's the end result now?
Yeah. You know, there are a lot of business challenges and opportunities that bring clients to our front door. So often it's, we want to drive more sales and revenue, but sometimes it's market expansion. Sometimes it's integrating brands that have been acquired. Sometimes it's an owner who wants to exit in a few years, but they have done some diligence and recognized their business isn't valued at what they thought it was. And they know they need to find a market fit and focus and build a brand that has more value. So one example of that was a a professional services firm that specialized in custom software development that brought us in. The owner brought us in because he's like, we've kind of capped in our growth. We can build anything in software, and we serve across all these different industries, and we're so good, but we're like the best kept secret. Right. So we brought a CMO in alongside of them who was able to pretty quickly identify that trying to be all things to everybody was simply watering down their value proposition. So they did an assessment of where their core strengths as a team were, where their greatest, most profitable long-term client successes were. And they really helped the client narrow in on the construction industry being a niche that they could accelerate in. And they rebuilt that client's go-to-market focus all around that industry focus with a proven process behind it and their own internal methodology for how they sold into these companies. And within a matter of, I think we were there 6 to 9 months implementing this new positioning, they had two strategic acquirers knocking on their door who were like, now that we see where you're focused, we see how you fit within our platform and we have an interest in acquiring your business. And that business owner did sell the business much sooner than he expected for greater multiples than he anticipated, just because of that right fit market focus.
I think that's where I see people screw up. Well, the two types of people we tend to come across quite a bit is the accidental entrepreneur. They fell into the business, they had a good idea, you know, and all of a sudden this success hit them out of the blue. And now it's gone from, hey, something that like landed in my lap to complete chaos. That's like one of our specialty clients that we work with. And I think that the other one that we work with is the one that is trying to grow and they're trying to be all things to all people.
Yes.
And they're, you know, they think that if they cast this super wide net, that that's going to attract all the fish. But, you know, marketers know that when you specialize or when you dial that in, that's really where the true growth and like the magic in marketing comes across.
Hi there. This is Ken Paskins, the CEO of GCE Strategic Consulting. What's holding your company back? It's often blind spots in leadership, miscommunication, misaligned priorities, and untapped growth opportunities. GCE's 360 assessment provides crystal clear insights into your team's strengths and challenges. Then one of our leaders will work with you to turn those insights into an action plan, ready to build a stronger, aligned team that can execute against your vision. Learn more about our 360 assessment today.
Yes. And what I find that founders and sales leaders often have fear, you know, if you go back to the story I shared about how most businesses are founder-led and sales-driven before they are going to really bring marketing to the table, to grow a business from startup to something of critical mass, for a while there, you do have to cast a wide net and try different things on and figure out that fit, figure out what's profitable, right? You have to. But eventually you can't scale if you continue to do that. But then when marketing comes to the table, there's a little bit of a freak out by sales and leadership when they're like, you're saying we need to say no to revenue. And so I like to use a baseball analogy to help them feel better about marketing's role, because we're not saying turn off all the opportunity that is outside of a tiny little market focus. But what we're saying instead is, if you think of your whole business like a baseball team, your delivery operational capability is the outfield. Like, you have a wide range left to right of what you could deliver and solutions you can provide. Your sales team's like the infield, like they're narrowed in a little bit. Maybe they've got a black book of specific industry connections they're maneuvering, right? But they can shape a deal left to right. But your marketer, your marketing team is like the pitcher. And for the dollars you invest in marketing to proactively go find business, they need to be aimed at a really small strike zone. And you have to define that strike zone by, like, if we're going to go to market to look for business, we're aiming at these criteria that make up our ideal client or customer persona, this kind of situation that's our happiest, healthiest, most profitable kind of a business opportunity. And that doesn't mean that if something comes to you, you have to say no to it. You can still make those exceptions and say yes thoughtfully, but at least the dollars you're investing to go to market have more wood behind the arrow. And there I just mixed analogies because I'm talking about archery and baseball at the same time. You can't trust me.
That's funny. So as you've scaled your own business, what challenges have taken you by surprise and how have you handled them?
Oh boy. Probably the biggest challenges that have been surprising and painful for me has been when I've not hired the right person to the right seat. Like when I have believed so much in my heart that this person was going to be the right person in the right role because I loved them, trusted them, you know, they were bright and shiny.
Yep.
And then when they're in the role, it's just not happening. And my biggest mistake has been hoping for too long or coaching for too long or just trying too hard to make it work or just picking up too much of the slack around them because I just want to see them feel successful. So the first several years, I mean, really up until recently, I moved through a few different evolutions in, ironically, the roles that were hardest for me were on the sales and marketing side of my business, which is where my natural expertise lies. It's almost like I'm so close to it that it's hard.
You're a little too close is what I was going to say.
It's harder for me to be objective. And so recently we've actually worked with a professional recruiting firm to take on some of that work. And that's been really helpful. But the people part is the hardest part and we're in the people business. And so people is what we do. So that's where it really hurts. Yeah.
And so when you say, and we see this a lot too, where like the person comes in and you like them and they're a lot like you, the visionary, they're a lot like the visionary. And that's where I think a lot of visionaries get in trouble with the right people, you know, right seat situation, because they're like, well, this person's great, but you know, there can only be kind of one visionary and you need that person that can actually do that job and do it effectively. And I hear all the time, well, I hired him because I liked him.
Yes.
I hired him because he was my, you know, sister's husband.
Yeah.
And he's loyal. He does a good job, right? I can trust him.
Mm-hmm.
We have a client that his janitor is his vice president now. And it was all because he could trust him, right?
Wow.
Is the company scaling? Is it doing what it's supposed to do? You know, no. And those are the conversations that have to be had. But you mentioned right people, right seat. So what systems or frameworks, I mean, I'm assuming you have familiarity with EOS, but what have you used? What has helped you scale? How are you growing this? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So we do run on EOS and I had the advantage of about 16 years ago working in another entrepreneurial fast growing company where I was the first employee with two founders. So on the founding team, I was not an owner, but I sat in what I would call the second row seat. I got to watch all the ownership dynamics without the risk, but also be a founding team member. Mm-hmm. And in that company, I was head of sales and marketing, which is a different topic for a different day, because that really means being a sales manager. And eventually I moved into being the head of marketing exclusively. But along the way, halfway through our journey, we had built a business that was everything to everyone, like most entrepreneurs initially do. And we realized we couldn't scale it. And the book traction was hot off the press at that point, like 16 years ago. And we became one of the first companies in Minnesota to implement EOS. And so many years ago, I had the experience of watching that transform the business I was part of then. And I knew when I started Authentic that I wanted to use the EOS framework. So even on day one, just me and my kitchen table debating over my values, building my VTO, putting it all to paper, I've been running on EOS from the very start, even though, you know, I was too small to really need it, but it was still helpful. And so after 3.5 years or so, I hired a EOS implementer to work alongside of us. And we're still working with him. Love him. He keeps us honest and keeps
my implementer.
Matt Beecher. Okay. Shout out to Matt Beecher.
Shout out to Matt Beecher, because we do keep the implementers in on these podcasts. So shout out there. Thank you for your service.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we've used 90 as a tool to help us manage our EOS. And we've just been really, really committed to documented proven processes and, you know, level 10 meeting cadences. And in fact, because of the company I was with previously, where I was leading marketing in an EOS run business, that gave me a lot of the inspiration for what is now Authentic's marketing operating system called Authentic Growth, which is an entire framework that takes the little box called marketing strategy on your VTO and turns it into a full, robust, thoughtful marketing strategy and plan, an annual budget, activation, all the things that you really need to truly lead and guide a marketing team. So there's just a lot of gratitude to EOS and the community of other leaders in that space that are so generous.
Right. It's great. Okay, we're going to shift gears a little bit. What are some of the top things that are impacting your company or the industry right now? So this can be positive or negative, but you know, when typically, you know, the purse strings tighten, a lot of times companies say, well, we need to look at marketing, right? Yeah. Or we need to cut back. And in my experience, this is when you should double down on marketing more than ever. But what are you seeing in your industry right now?
Yeah, that's a great setup because we've been one of Minnesota's Fast 50 growing companies for the past couple of years. We're an Inc. 5000. We've had an awesome trajectory. And 2024 was a frustrating year because the market did slow down and get stodgy. Things were moving really slowly with decision-making for clients. We've had tremendous client retention. And I credit that to the fact that not only are we bringing value every day, but we're showing that measurably and clients understand the ROI of their investment with Authentic. But new business was slower last year than I've ever seen before. This year, the market is still uncertain for all new reasons, right? The clients that we serve in manufacturing and nonprofits have been hit really fast by cuts and by tariff impacts. And we're just working really nimbly with them. But at the same time, our new business pipeline is more robust than I've ever seen before. And to point back to when things slow down, you should double down. That's exactly what we did last year. When things started to slow down, we took advantage of optimizing our entire operating structure. And we were more profitable last year than years prior. We also started the process of hiring for more business development staff so that if the market was going to stay slower, we were just going to chase it harder, right? Bring more staff in. We did not slow down our marketing investment. We continued to build that team internally. So we really doubled down, and that is really showing up right now. In April, we're not done with April yet, but we've just had the strongest month of the year, top two in the last 2 years. So there's huge positive motion out there. And we're hopeful that, you know, we're going to get through some of the economic bumps and our clients will get through it, and that'll just continue to grow. But I'm a firm believer in practicing what we preach. We stay invested. We want to be ahead of the demand curve as it comes back around. So that's definitely a dynamic happening for us right now. One other dynamic is that through COVID, when I started the business, nobody knew what a fractional CMO was.
Right.
Through COVID and all the impacts that everybody felt, there's a huge boost in the gig economy, right? A lot of people are taking their own careers into their own hands. There's more fractional leaders than ever. And that's both good and challenging. It raises all ships in terms of awareness about the model. But the frustrating thing is that there are a lot of people using the title of fractional CMO that would never meet the credentials of being a CMO in real life in a C-suite. And so we get to stand apart because of the credentials of our team. But sometimes it's a confusing buyer market in that way.
And again, with our synergies, I mean, 100% the same thing we experience. And Ken had said something on a podcast we did the other day that I think only 4% of people out there are certified integrators. You've got a whole bunch of people playing integrators.
Yes.
There's one company in particular that we've heard have done some really damaging things to clients' businesses because you've got a lot of people in roles, right, that latched onto this very hot title. And they found a way to take it and market it. But like you said, if this were a C-suite position, they would not have filled it or would have never even come close to qualifying it for it. So why we're on that? I mean, how do you get around that? How do you, because buyer confusion is real, right? You know, how do you get around the perception that, you know, not all CMOs are cut from the same cloth?
Part of it is education. So whereas we used to educate on what is a fractional CMO, now we educate on what different models exist, pros and cons, what to look out for, how to qualify the right fit. And ultimately, we trust the process. Everything is a cycle in this world. Like the bad actors will eventually flame out and the strong performers will continue to rise. And sometimes a prospect that's looking at Authentic and then looking at a much less expensive backyard freelance option needs to choose the wrong path in order to understand the right path or the better fit. So great. We love them and cheer them on whatever they choose. And a lot of times they end up back at our front door, and we're able to bring them a true executive on a fractional part-time basis that is going to bring that strong, steady strategic leadership that they need. So yeah. I don't worry too much about all the noise out there. I just try to provide a good safe space for education and help them consider what their options are. And the right things happen in the right time for the right reasons. We just trust that.
And I'm a big fan of that as well, too. So a few more questions here. We're going to shift gears one more time. You definitely have it together. You are, you know, well-versed, well-spoken. You definitely know your stuff. But as a leader, you know, how do you maintain work-life balance while leading a company? Because you've been doing this long enough to know you can't burn the candle at ends indefinitely. And when you do, something happens. So how do you get that balance incorporated into these big plans you have for yourself and your company?
Yeah. Well, maybe about 10 years ago or so, I had an epiphany when my kids were littler. Now my youngest is 15, and I have a 15, a 19, and a 21-year-old. So two in college, one at home in high school. When I started my business, I had littles and middles, you know, eight years ago. And that was about the time when I started to recognize that work-life balance was never going to be sustainable. And I started to embrace the concept of work-life integration instead. Because I always felt like previously as a full-time working mom, prior to starting Authentic, I had to travel a lot. I just felt like I was half-assing it in every single category. And I was down on myself about everything all the time. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But when I had the opportunity to start my own business, I made a few decisions up front. I decided that I was not going to grow a company any faster than I could grow my family with all of my values and priorities intact. So if that meant a slower growth, I was fine with that because I want to be present with my family while my kids are growing up.
Put a VTO in for your family.
Yeah, we actually call it the ZOS, the Zik operating system. Yes, we run on ZOS in my home and EOS in my business.
Hilarious. I love it.
It's true. And so I've allowed myself, I work fewer hours for myself than I ever worked for other people's businesses. And I really protect those boundaries. And yeah. I have been intentional about cultivating a workplace culture where we focus for all of our employees on love your life and love your work in that order. Yeah. In that order. So we let them determine what that looks like. But for me, it's been about not compromising and not saying yes to other things. You know, I recently joined a nonprofit board, but it's the first other thing I said yes to in 8 years because I'm like, I can't say yes to anything besides growing a family and growing a business. Yeah. So just being intentional.
No is a powerful word. And I do think CEOs struggle with that word sometimes, but it is powerful and it's there for a reason and it doesn't make you a bad person. No. And, you know, that people pleasing is what gets CEOs in so much trouble. Instead of having that hard conversation about productivity at work or whatever the situation is, they'll start taking on more. And then, you know, not saying no to that event, they'll keep going. And then all of a sudden, you know, and that's typically when they come to us and they're at our front door, you know, but they're like, I'm not in control of my life or my business. And I have no idea what happened. And it mm-hmm. starts out slow, but those boundaries are really, really important. And we've seen a huge spike in burnout with CEOs over the past couple of years. I think probably because from COVID, everybody tried to ramp up. You know, everybody went down or a lot of people went down. GCE was like stable, but like, you know, then they tried to ramp up and make up and, you know, burnout. And so we've started doing a bunch of podcasts about like mental health for the CEO, emotional health, physical health yeah. for the CEO, because I think that those were like taboo conversations until now. I mean, what the kids get to talk about their mental health all the time and they feel unsafe, you know, like, so we should be able to too, right?
We need to. A couple other things that have really helped me there is that I actually am a member of two different CEO peer groups. You need to be in safe spaces with other founders and CEOs who get it because they're living it. Because there are things you just can't talk about, with your spouse in a way they're going to understand or with your employees in a way that's appropriate. So you have to have those places where you can fully be heard and supported and understood. And then I've been real protective of my clarity breaks. And for me, what that looks like is approximately once per quarter, I take myself out of town, usually to my Northwoods cabin in Minnesota, just by myself. And I spend 2 days quiet, you know, with a notebook and journaling. Sometimes I'll work on a special project because I want to just tap into my creative juices, but I get away. And it always helps me to back up and remember my why, my priorities, focus my vision and come back with clarity. And I actually put on my VTO several years ago a goal to take a 1 month sabbatical, and I prepped my whole team for it. And I had a newly minted COO integrator, right? And it was like, I'm going to stress test this. And so I did. I took a full month sabbatical and I didn't check my email once. And only my integrator had the bat phone for how to reach me. And she never had to reach me. And the business did great that month. There was a lot for me to catch up on when I got back. But yeah, man, it was an awesome exercise to enable and empower the rest of my team and give myself a break. And I probably should put that back on the VTO again soon.
Yeah. And one of the things I do is with, our employee, we create a word of the month. And then every Monday we have to check in on that word of the month. Like, how did we do with it? And so for May, it's going to be take five. And the second take five, find your peace. And that to me, you know, I can get so in it all the time. When it says take five, I don't mean just take 5 minutes. It means like, stop, get up from the computer, you know, go breathing, go walk to the cul-de-sac, go call a friend. Like, you know, take a minute and just bring yourself back, because then you come back and you're more recharged or whatever. But I love doing that with her because, you know, we hold each other accountable to, you know, all right, well, what was, you know, your week like? Well, I didn't do great with take five and now I need to adjust it. And so I think these little things is the difference between, you know, like working to live and living to work, right?
Yes.
You get to have these little things in between there that make it brighter.
Yes, I agree. And accountability is so important. Having battle buddies,
yeah,
is important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so as we wrap this up, if somebody listening with you wanted to take the next step, what should they do?
Well, they can connect with me directly on LinkedIn. Find me as Jennifer Zick. I'm pretty easy to tap there. And they can also visit authenticbrand.com to learn a little bit more about the work that we do, see some case studies, reach us through our contact page, and we'll be sure to follow up and set up a, you know, no obligation consultation. Just get acquainted and help them navigate what makes sense for a next step for them.
Awesome. Well, I immensely enjoyed this conversation today. So thank you so much for being on the Shift Spotlight.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a lot of fun, Winter.
Thank you for listening to the Shift Spotlight podcast. If you are a business owner, CEO, founder, visionary, or of the EOS community seeking recognition for your exceptional expertise while gaining exposure through our remarkable network, we are actively searching for podcast guests who can bring their inspiring stories to light, and we'd love to showcase your journey. Please visit shiftspotlight.com to apply today. And if you are a listener, I'd love to give a shout out to your business to our whole audience for free. All you have to do is leave a review on Apple Podcasts or follow our newsletter on LinkedIn by searching GCE Strategic Consulting. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. We believe that every person has a message that can positively impact the world. We love our community who listens and shares our program. So hit subscribe to be inspired and motivated. I promise to bring positivity and inspiration to you and your growing business. We will see you next time.